All right. So one last foundation, one last framing. You can begin to kind of get a sense of here, all these framings of the Satipatthana is to get us to be out of this closed loop way that we live. We live in this closed loop understanding. I mean, our entire perspective on life is based on some previous framing we came up with. And the only reason why I can say it so definitively is that I don't have the same framing I used to have. And when I had that framing, I thought that was the framing. The only difference with me now is I'm always questioning whether the framing I'm holding now is correct too. Maybe that framing's wrong. I just never seem to be settled on whether or not the framing is in the right, is correct. But this last foundation, so we start out with this foundation that just, it's very simple, easy to grasp, coming into the present moment with form, body, sense doors, elements, breath, just this easily. It's not easy to capture, but it's easy to identify that as a framing for coming into the present moment, because everything that's happening in the body, in this embodied space, is in the present moment. Anything else is in our, it's either relatable through the past or the future or some other outside of the present moment, an evaluation. So learning to come into the present moment with the body, that's the first kind of present moment itself. In that present moment, you can begin to see the feeling tones that impact our habit behavior. You can begin to see how you're impacted, and what's pushing you towards behavior. The third foundation is this beginning to see the framing or the formations that that we're living out of. All these formations, all these thoughts are really connected to, even our emotions are all connected to habit. So I remember once, see if I can help you see what I'm pointing to. There are some times that we feel embarrassed, and it's funny, right? We do something, and everybody laughs, and I laugh, and everybody laughs. It's funny. And there are other times when we feel embarrassed, and we are overwhelmed. We're mortified. We can't even think about it. Every time I think about it, I get so upset. I can't believe that happened. I want to run away and hide. How come? How come sometimes we're embarrassed and it's funny and, you know, don't even remember it, half of it, other than the joke of it, the funny of it. And other times it's mortifying. And I wished it never happened. And I live under this cursed, you know, weight of something I did that was embarrassing. Why do you think that is? And do we ever consider how come that actually happens? Because when embarrassment comes as a random thing, random emotional thing, and I don't somehow or another feel that it says something about me, then it just comes and goes. But if I feel like this moment somehow fits into the habit frame that I've decided of who I am, now I begin to panic over this constant embarrassment. And it adds into this framing, this habit way of perceiving things. So the way the Buddha wanted to cut through this whole selfing mechanism is through this fourth foundation. This is what the fourth foundation is pointing to. How we are relating to whatever is happening. And the fourth foundation has a series of lists that we're not going to go through. I decided I would type up a little cheat sheet that kind of explains all these little things I've been talking about, and I'll list those four foundations in that. And then if we have your email address, we'll just send it out to that email link. But this fourth foundation is a series of Dharma principles that we can begin to see how we're relating. The most noticeable one is the hindrances. You can notice how you are relating to your experience by whether or not you have the presence of one of these one of these hindrances, five hindrances. And the way the Buddha talked about it as a framing is not get rid of your hindrances, but is desire, or is the hindrances present or not? Is this desiring mind present or not? Is aversion present or not? Is sloth and torpor, sleepiness present or not? Is restlessness present or not? Is doubt present or not? So the idea is not to somehow feel bad as a practitioner because you're sleepy. We feel so embarrassed. Like all of a sudden after dinner, after lunch, I'm sitting here and I'm sleepy and it's like something's wrong with me as a practitioner because I'm sleepy. Your body wants to digest what you just ate, and so it's shutting down everything, including your thinking mind. It's shutting everything down on purpose. So the idea that we would somehow feel bad because we're sleepy, or feel bad because we're restless, feel bad because I want the sit to end, or I, you know, don't like some pain in my knee or my back or whatever, that doesn't make any sense. That is not you or me doing that. That is the nature of the body system. So what the Buddha pointed to in this next framing is to begin to see how you're relating to it. That's what's important. So it's not the sleepiness, but how are you relating to that sleepiness? How are you looking at it? Are you just ignoring it? Can you see the pleasantness in that sleepiness? Can you see that it's unpleasant? Can you see how it's impacting your meditation or not impacting your meditation? Can you see what's happening with the sleepiness? You're more interested in that than you are with whether or not you're sleepy. Because that's really the body-mind function. So he did this in relation to the hindrances, the things that overwhelm the mind and get and create difficulties to be able to be, you know, sitting, ardency, mindful, clear comprehension, all of the stuff that we think we're going to be upright, ardent, mindful, clearly comprehending what's happening, and I'm going to practice. The hindrances are the things that disrupt that ability. And the seven factors of awakening are the things that support that. And whether or not you can see the seven factors of awakening. There's a sutta where there's some monks that go early to alms round. I'm always assuming that they're young monks because I don't think a monk's going to go early for alms round unless you're really hungry and you're just trying to go early and get in line. So you go early and they can't really do the alms. So they go to this place where a lot of monks and practitioners of other sects kind of hang out, I guess, and wait for the villagers to wake up and line up. And so they go to this place and a group of people from a different sect come to them and say, well, what's so special about your teacher, Gotama? I mean, our teacher teaches about the seven factors of awakening and our teacher teaches about the five hindrances. So we know all about that too. What makes your teacher so great? And again, I think they're new because they didn't know why the Buddha was so special. They knew there was something special about the practice that they were doing, but they didn't know why. And so they don't really answer. They just kind of sit quietly. And then as soon as they get through at alms, they go and they ask the Buddha, what makes you so special? What makes us so special? We couldn't tell. We couldn't tell these people. This is what they asked us, but we couldn't tell them. And the Buddha says something, my paraphrasing of it is that he tells them, he doesn't teach seven factors of awakening and hindrances. He teaches discernment. He teaches how to know when to bring out certain factors and when to bring out other factors. So if you're feeling very, very sluggish and, you know, like sloth and torpor, that is not the time to practice deep concentration because your mind is sluggish. That's the time to rouse investigation and joy. And if your mind is all active and busy and it's restless, that is not the time to arouse energy. That's the time to bring in calm, settle down. And so he says he teaches discernment, not the factors. And what I think the monks begin to realize is that by being with Buddha, they were learning more and more how not just following the instructions, but what some of you said earlier this morning, you're beginning to notice things about what's happening and apply some kind of practice to help yourself stay steady. All right, so Sherry's, okay, I have the breath, then I open to thinking, I lose it, go back to my mantra, pry the breath, and then I lose it. Or someone said something about noticing the bees and noticing what's happening in the present moment. This way of discerning what is needed in this moment to keep me present. That's what we are cultivating. And this fourth factor, fourth foundation, this framing is all of the various things, the various lists that the Buddha has to help us judge our relationship. So it includes the hindrances, the things that overwhelm the mind. It includes the seven factors of awakening, this gradual path of steadying the mind from having a sense of mindfulness, investigation, all the way to a sense of wisdom, of concentration and wisdom. Or concentration and equanimity. And then this sense of the sense doors. And even though we think of, am I hearing? Am I seeing? Am I sense touching? The Buddha gave 18 different ways to be with the sense doors. 18. And I think the sutta even goes further, it can get as detailed as 42 different things to begin to look at with the sense doors. So it's not hearing, seeing. The more you want to begin to consider, the more you could consider there is a sound, there is an ear that can take in a sound, and there is the actual contact of that ear with the sound, and you're knowing the sound is happening. And there is that for everything that's pleasing, and there is that same three things happening for everything that's not pleasing, and that same thing is happening for everything that's neutral. And it also happens to the nose, it happens to the mouth, it happens to the mind, it happens to everything. And there's this huge amount of capacity we have to sit quietly and begin to really understand what the sense doors are doing and how we relate to it. There are the five aggregates. The five aggregates are the things that make us turn into selves. And this is what's part and parcel of what we begin to look at when we get overwhelmed with emotion. And there's a body, so there's form, there's feeling tones, there's the thoughts and the mental formations that's happening, there's our perception of what's going on, and this consciousness. And then in that moment where some emotion comes up, all of that gels together and I'm having this emotion. But you could use the five aggregates to begin to sense all the different parts and spread it out. Like we used to cut out all those little paper dolls and then spread it out and all the little people. So you have, oh, there's this. I remember once at a retreat deciding I was going to come up with a big grid, a big huge, I went and got all this paper because I thought I was going to spread it out. A big master list. I was going to come up with all the emotions that I had and all the different body sensations that I had and the kind of thoughts that would show up and the images. And I was just going to write. It was going to be big, big. I need lots of paper. I think I had about 11 actual sensations. And they showed up in different configurations for different emotions. So it's not like sadness is very different from, embarrassment. It's the same tingling sensations, same emotions, but they have different degrees. Maybe the heaviness is on top in sadness, and the heaviness is on the bottom in embarrassment. But all of our emotions are a conglomerate of the same sensations. They just show up in different configurations. I was stunned. I thought for sure it would be way more complicated than that, but it's not. Things that we call, we have all this huge list of emotions that we can decipher into, and we know what they are. And yet, it's all dependent on the image that actually shows up, the storyline, the narrative. And that narrative has a lot to do with what we call that emotion. I just was a little bit shocked at how habitual all of this is. This is what I'm pointing to. It's very habitual. Our lives are very habitual. We put our clothes on exactly the same way every day. We move our bodies exactly the same way every day. And as soon as we do some different move, we start feeling pain, like that was a lot, do some workout and move your body in a different way and it's all achy and painful. as long as we stay within our normal habit means, that seems to be the righteous way to be. So learning to move outside of this becomes a bigger framing. And I think what the Buddha does in the fourth foundation is he gives us all these different lists that you could sit and practice with. So mostly we just sit and follow the breath. But you could sit and think to yourself or contemplate the five clinging aggregates. Notice breath. You could do it with your breath. This is the way Bhante Buddharakita said. He was telling me that you could think about your breath, and you could think the breath itself is called the body. And then the feeling tone is that whether or not you're the breath, whatever it is, the breathing, does it feel pleasant? Does it feel unpleasant? Does it feel neither? And then the mental formations is all this thinking that's going on with you and the breath, and the sense of perception. How do you perceive the breath? Do you perceive it in the belly? Do you perceive it in the chest? Do you perceive it in the nose? Do you perceive the breath breathing slowly or long breath, short breath? Is it calm breath? Is it jagged breath? And then this consciousness, do you even know, is the mind on the breath? And you could begin to take something as simple as that and spread it out. So I think this might seem like, oh, that's the kind of stuff you do on retreat. I can't do this at home. I mean, my mind is all over the place. It's all crazy. And I begin to learn that either I'm going to sit there and fight with the mind about why is it doing so much thinking and it should not be thinking so much, or I'm going to sit there and notice sounds and the ears that are hearing that sound, not me hearing the sound. Ears are picking up sound. And there's this knowing that the ears are picking up sound. And what kind of sounds does the ears pick up? Could they pick up sounds in Tacoma? If I open them up louder, could I hear people talking in Tacoma? And I would sit there and try to see how many sounds does the ears hear? How tiny can they get? And before long, I'm no longer caught in this thinking mind. I'm no longer caught in my agitation and panic because I'm sitting here actually interested in this one little tiny thread that the Buddha mentioned in the six senses. I could go through all 18 of them. Could do the same thing with smelling, tasting. Could do the same thing with seeing. I could sit here for a long time and begin to see all this different information. The point of this fourth foundation is that if our practice is only about following the breath, everyone in this room knows how boring that gets. Everyone here knows that. We get bored with it. We do it out of have to sit, so I'm just going to sit here for 20 minutes and I'm get my sit in, and then I did my practice, and then that's it. We never grow outside of it. The meditation doesn't become the inner stability it could become because we stay trapped in this idea that meditation is only about the breath. But this meditation that the Buddha was pointing to is about freeing the mind outside of the limitations of this habit world that we live in. And what's possible outside of that habit world, you have no idea, because you only know what the mind tells you just so far. So until we're willing to open a door, a crack, and venture out and look outside, we won't see what's possible. But there is something remarkable on the other side. We can see it occasionally. If we get still enough, we'll see something like, wow, that was like this fantastic sit. Where did that come from? And we won't have another one. For days and days, months and months, years and years, we can have 2 minutes of this bright liberation, and then sort of like, ah, and then it's gone. And we never question, what was that? What is that? How did that happen? Come into be. It just sort of happens. So this weekend, I wanted to create the possibility in you that there is something that is stable, steady, it is freeing, it is beautiful, and that it is absolutely available. And it's not dependent on anything that's going on out there. But it will, when you begin to cultivate it, help you access out there in a completely different way. So we're going to sit a little bit this afternoon and walk a little bit. The afternoon we're going to leave at 4. I'm sorry, I have another commitment that I have to do with my family before I leave again. And so we're going to do that. We're going to leave at 4. So I talked a little bit longer so we could get a framing for this fourth foundation.